This morning I'm going to be thinking about angels. Has anyone ever said to you, or have you ever said to someone, "Oh, you are an angel"? Sort of channeling a bit of Dick Emery there, I felt. But, "Oh, you are an angel." Well, it's a common enough expression, and I think we know what we mean by it, which is that someone has helped us, or we have helped someone else. I don't think that anyone would be particularly impressed, though, if we said to them that they were supernatural beings in the form of a snake with multiple sets of wings, a number of heads, and as many eyes as a fly. You see, that's one of the descriptions of angels as we find them in the Old Testament. I need to move along slightly. Yes, there we are. Those are some angels as represented. The man at the bottom there is Isaiah, and at the top is God, and these are the angels that he has seen, the seraphim that he has seen in the temple. In Isaiah chapter 6, with six wings they had, with two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And then those are seraphim. These are cherubim, even more exotic. Ezekiel chapter 10, their entire bodies, including their backs, their hands and their wings, were completely full of eyes, as were their four wheels. Each of the cherubim had four faces. One face was that of a cherub, the second the face of a human being, the third the face of a lion, and the fourth the face of an eagle. What would people think if you said that they were a fearsome warrior who would tread on the heads of their victims? This is Michael, the archangel that we read about in Daniel. But in Exodus chapter 33, "I will send an angel before you and drive out the Canaanites, Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites." You see, while we might describe someone as an angel when a person does a good deed, that isn't actually in the biblical angel's job description. These creatures, for they are indeed creatures, part of the created order, are not like us. They're described as being heavenly beings, and therefore literally otherworldly. Angels are not like us. And maybe that's a good thing. I need to flip back. There was a German film called Wings of Desire from the 1980s. It was filmed in West Berlin a couple of years before the fall of the Berlin Wall. And it tells the story of two angels who listen in unseen on the lives of Berliners, many of whom are lonely and unhappy. And it was remade as an English language film and set in Los Angeles, which gives its name to the new film, City of Angels. In the American film, one of the angels' roles is to escort people who are on the point of death through to the afterlife. And one of the angels, called Seth, sees Maggie, a heart surgeon who tries so hard to prevent her patients' deaths. And Seth becomes besotted by Maggie, but knows that as an angel, he can never know what it feels like to touch a human being. He will never know what it feels like to feel her touch on his skin. But he finds that there are angels who have done what he thought was impossible. They have become human. I'm going to see a little clip from the film in which Seth meets Nathaniel, whom Seth discovers was once an angel, but is now a human being. Now, I should offer a small caveat before showing this clip. For anyone of a nervous disposition, there is a brief glimpse of a middle-aged man's naked behind. It comes right at the end, so, before you notice it, it's gone. But, you know, I just to cover myself.
"People don't believe in us anymore. Do they still gather together at sunrise?"
"And sunset, yes."
"Take me there?"
Can you hear it?
You see, while the angels are the only ones who can hear the dawn chorus, it's only human beings who can feel the sea breeze and the waves breaking on our skin. You see, we're different from angels. Those who are of heaven are very different from those who are children of Adam, human beings. C.S. Lewis wrote a poem called On Being Human, in which he compared our human experience with that of the angels. Here are a couple of stanzas. They see the form of air, but mortals breathing it drink the whole summer down into the breast. The lavish pinks, the field new mown, the ravishing sea smells, the wood fire smoke that whispers rest. The tremor on the rippled pool of memory that from each smell in widening circle goes. The pleasure and the pang, can angels measure it? An angel has no nose. Far richer they, I know the senses' witchery guards us like air, from heavens too big to see. Imminent death to man, that barbed sublimity and dazzling edge of beauty unsheathed would be. Yet here, within this tiny charmed interior, the parlour of the brain, their maker shares with living men some secrets in a privacy forever ours, not theirs. C.S. Lewis's point was to express the gift we have in being human. But it also has the effect of explaining what angels are and also are not. In the Old Testament of the Bible, it's the word malach that we translate as angel. Our word comes from the Greek word angelos. And both of these words, malach and angelos, have messenger as their original meaning. And so the primary role of an angel is that of a messenger. And we see this in the Christmas story, where angels come to Zechariah, and here in this picture to Mary, and also to Joseph to deliver messages from God. But it's not just the New Testament function of angels. While they're not described as such, the book of Genesis mentions how three visitors come to Abraham to tell him that Sarah would bear a son. They're not described as angels in the book of Genesis, but they are usually understood as such. And the writer of Genesis makes it clear that they are messengers. Genesis chapter 18, we read, "The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre, while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing by." Angels can be ordinary. One of my favourite angel films, if one can use that term, stars John Travolta as a rather disreputable angel called Michael, who turns up at a boarding house in the American Midwest. I'm going to show a minute or two of this. Here we see a group of journalists from a tabloid newspaper. And this newspaper specialises in sensational stories, a bit like the Daily Star or the Sun even. And they've come to this one-horsed town to interview Pansy Milbank. She's taken in Michael, this angel, as her tenant. Unfortunately, Mrs. Milbank is not a fit woman. And just as she starts to meet these journalists, she has a coughing fit.
Ah.
It was nice of you to come. Mr. Quinlan, I'm contemplating my death.
Are you with the angel?
Do you see an angel?
I don't think I do.
Then how could I be with them?
Well, we don't know exactly how it works with angels.
How it works? If he's in the room, then you're with him. If he's somewhere else, then you're not.
And that's why we can't see him now. He's not here.
Are you impaired in some way that I haven't noticed, miss?
Miss Winters has probably never heard of an angel living in a motel.
There.
Michael! Are you coming down, dear?
Yeah.
I particularly like the part of the conversation where Dorothy asks how you know when the angel is there. If he's in the room, you're with him, and if he's somewhere else, you're not. Well, despite his having wings, Michael is actually pretty ordinary, and so maybe when we describe people, human beings, as angels, maybe we're not so far from the truth. Abraham saw those three men who came to him as messengers from God, and so messengers, angels, can come in different guises. Stella had been a minister's wife for some years and was not someone who was given to flights of fancy. Some years ago, she was a member of my church, and she shared a story with me about an unexpected encounter that she had. And because it was an unusual story, I asked her if she'd write it down, and this is what she wrote. It was a bleak December day, cold with a touch of rain in the air. I felt like, career-wise, I had touched rock bottom. It was the 10th anniversary of my daughter's death. In just a few weeks, I would have no choice but to leave Abingdon Baptist Church, where we had friends and where we had worked for 9 years. I decided to get away from my work at the shop in my lunch hour, but it was too cold for walking, so I went to St. Mary's Church just over the road. They set aside their chancel for private prayer, a rather bare and cold spot. No one was there, but there were a few candles, low but still burning in the prayer candle holder. So I lit a new one for my daughter sat with more senses than one with my back to the wall. They have a short little service in the lunch hour at St. Mary's. A woman came in and set things up, and a clergyman read a lesson and said a prayer. I was the only congregation. Afterwards, the woman walked out by me without a glance. The clergyman gave me a passing look as he went that clearly said, "I ought to speak to you, but I don't want to get involved." And then I became aware of a lad standing in the aisle near me. He looked about 12. I wonder why he wasn't in school. He didn't seem very warmly dressed for a cold day. I summed him up in my mind as a streetwise kid. And then he said to me, "You look sad." "Yes," I said, not wanting to say more. "Did you light a candle?" he asked. I agreed. "Is it that tall one near the front?" I agreed again, and we both looked at it for a while. And then he was gone. And I left to go back to work through a completely deserted chancel and nave, but feeling strangely comforted, though I wished that I'd asked the lad about himself. Stella didn't say that there was anything supernatural in what had happened to her, but she believes that what happened was a message from God. I'm not sure what I think about the idea of guardian angels. It's undeniable that in Psalm 91 we read this: "If you say, 'The Lord is my refuge,' and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you, no disaster will come near your tent. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent." That passage is also referenced in the New Testament, although it's Satan that quotes it. I believe that these verses from Psalm 91 should not be taken literally. The language used suggests that this is a passage about having faith in God rather than describing the means by which God will care for us and will save us. But I also believe that there are moments in our lives when God speaks to us in a very specific way. And these occurrences can't be objectively verified. But for the one who receives the message, they are definitely true. There is another side to this story of messengers from God, which is that we have a role to play. And it's not a passive one. There's a saying that not all superheroes wear capes. Well, neither do all angels have wings. God still uses angels, messengers. We just may not be aware of who they are. And I guess to avoid missing one, we should follow the advice of the writer to the letter to the Hebrews. Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. I like this idea of entertaining angels. It makes me think of angels as part of a concert party coming to entertain us. But of course, it's about us entertaining them, showing hospitality to strangers. And so may we too love one another. But I think perhaps even more important is that we show hospitality to strangers and to those who are strange. Because you never know through whom God might speak to you. And we just need to make sure that we're ready to listen to what they say. Amen.